Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this episode of Youth Talk, episode 36, the Stanford Cardinal edition. This is Grant Bagby from TornbySports.com. And with me, as usual, is Joseph Silverswig. How are you doing today, Joseph?
Doing great. We've got a little bit of a heater problem going on in our studio, so we're all melting, but we're going to power through for you guys because we care.
That's right. If technical difficulties could not get much worse for us between last week straight up losing an episode, all of our hard work going down the drain in the click of a button, and now we're literally being tortured via heat. But we will make it through. No worries. As usual, you can follow me at GrantTBS on Twitter. Joseph is at JSilverSwig. And please reach out to us and let us know how we're doing on the show. You can follow the show at UTalk and email us at utalk@gmail.com. So let's get into it. As usual, we start the episode with the Quick Hitters edition. And let's start off with a Ute player we were all a little curious to see hitting the NBA a little early in Kyle Kuzma. I mean, at least I thought he might have been leaving a little early, but here he is today rocking it in the preseason.
He's a lot of people, not Utah people, just people's preseason pick for Rookie of the Year. He's had a really, really good start. I think he deserves a lot of credit for recognizing whatever it was about himself or the situation of being a college athlete or the lack of spacing on the college floor or whatever issue it was, but for him to say, you know what, I think I'm not as good of a college player as I am going to be an NBA player, and I'm just going to go prove it now. And he's certainly the steal of the draft, I think, already. And there's not a lot of Lakers fans listen to Utah football podcasts, but it's an exciting time for Laker fans because they've got the number one pick with the world's craziest dad. Is he number one, number two?
He's not number one, but definitely anyway, the number one with the world's craziest dad.
and the steal at the end of the first half. So,
and I will make a correction. He's not. Most of the other crazy dads deserve to be behind bars. He hasn't quite proven to that point, but it's gonna be interesting. It's just preseason. I hope he's as much as he's previewing to be. But hey, the craziest thing I haven't had a chance to talk about it was the bomb that Kuzmiak dropped on whoever his prep coach was, that saying in essence it was going to cost the U $100K to get Kuzma. I'm glad that didn't happen, because my goodness, that would talk. All the talk we had the other week, I mean, you guys didn't hear
it,
but it was great talk about how clean the youth program is, it would be crazy to hear that, you know, we think the program is clean, and then Chris Kobiak lets it slip. They accidentally may have paid $100K to Kuz, but you know he backed it up. We're so clean. But hey, good luck to Kuzma. I hope he continues to kill it, and we can continue to recruit some more top talent to the running youths. Now let's do a little Pac-12 in review. Starting off, I'm just going top to bottom, and this is by rankings, I believe. First up, USC loses to Washington State 30-27. Luke Falk playing in the game he looked like a freaking stud.
He did. He looked great. And I think everybody's got to remember, before they all jump on the Luke Falk Heisman train, he was actually pulled off the field for a portion of the Boise State game. He hasn't been perfect this season, even though the Cougars, I thought it was a great game. Cougars looked good. But what I really took away from it is even though some of my numbers say there's teams that Utah's got a 70-75% chance of losing to, I don't see it. I don't see anybody but Washington, nobody in the South certainly, who Utah doesn't have a solid shot, really isn't a world-class team in the South. I think the only world-class team in the Pac-12 is Washington. I think that leaves the pathway open for Utah to win the division this year.
All right. Well, after that was, speaking of Washington, as everyone should do in the Pac-12, they obliterated Oregon State 42-7. I don't know if there's much to add to this outside of Jake Browning and Dante Pettis hooking up a bunch and in the end having 3 TDs each.
Yeah. It was 7-0 at the half, which was interesting. But it did not stay interesting for long, and there really is not much interesting to say about Oregon State except to wonder if Gary Anderson's going to have a job in the next few weeks.
Hey, look, he made it through another game, another game week. Here
we
go.
Every time he gets off the tarmac and onto the plane, it's a win for Gary Anderson.
So after that, Stanford hangs in there and beats Arizona State, but I guess ends up by beating them by 10, but this is a pretty close game at the half.
Yeah, you know, it was a lot like Utah's wins are in this kind of game where the score was close, but as you're watching the thing, it just never really felt like ASU was going to figure it out. At the end, they were driving down 10, but it just shook your head. So there's no way. But what they did do really well is they were able to run on Stanford, and so was USC, and right up the tackles. I said, well, Arizona State has a sparky formation, just the wildcat where you're direct snapping to a wide receiver running back. And they got a lot of yards on it. They averaged over 8 yards a play, and it was mostly just runs right up the middle. So there's a blueprint there for how you beat Stanford on offense, and I think USC and ASU have laid the groundwork for that. And we'll talk more about if Troy Taylor can capitalize on that opportunity.
I mean, big opportunity for Troy Taylor, in my opinion. We can talk about that a little bit this week. But next, we got UCLA beats Colorado. 27-23. Yeah, sorry, guys. Choking on my throat here. We are sweating like craziness. But, sorry, he got to me. 27-23 UCLA.
That was a good one. I enjoyed it. I don't think either of those teams is particularly good. But it was kind of just a fun back-and-forth game. It was interesting to watch and see who was going to pull out. Colorado now is 0-2 in conference. I don't think they're terrible, but they've got to win some games, and I don't see them winning too many this season. There's a lot of good teams, and they're already, you know, playing the hard stack against them.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see whether Colorado can pull it together. I mean, I think they have a decent team. They have a decent enough team to compete in the South, where I think it's very, I mean, it's USC, I think, is there, Utah's there, and then everyone else is questionable, in my opinion. But and then I feel like the team that was looking like they might be good on paper may have hit the wall, or maybe the rock, or the, no, let's hear, long paper, rock, scissors reference. Maybe the scissors finally caught up to Cal in Oregon, and Oregon crushed them 45-24.
Yeah, and without Herbert, for me, the big news out of this game was the injury to Oregon's quarterback, Herbert. He broke his collarbone, so he's out probably not the whole season, but a substantial length of time, 4 to 6 weeks. And people haven't been talking about him much, but he was leading the Pac-12 in QBR, which is an advanced metric for quarterback measurement that sort of adds running and passing and everything into the mix. And he was leading the Pac-12, and he was doing better than Cam Darnold. He's doing better than Josh Rosen, doing better than Browning. So that's a big, big blow for Oregon. And it's going to be interesting to see what they do. But despite that, they were able to come away with that game, and they did it on the strength of a surprising defense and a good running game. And that's a formula that's going to work for them if they can keep coming back to it. I mean, next week's definitely a tougher test with being at home against Washington State. That's certainly one that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, so, I mean, we'll see. But then our final quick hitter kind of ties into Stanford. What we want to hit here is we have some official visitors this weekend on the recruiting front.
Yeah.
Fill us in, Joseph.
So it's a great weekend for recruiting. Utah, I would say the best ever based on what I can remember. Utah brought in Jack Tuttle, Utah's top 100 player, amazing quarterback commit. And along with him and Penei Sewell, who is a big-time offensive line prospect, they brought in seven skill players. Some of them are athletes. Some of them are wide receivers. One of them is a little scat back guy. But there's about 25 stars between those seven players. There's four-star receivers on campus on Saturday. And they're all there with their quarterback, Jack Tuttle. So I think they've done a really good job of kind of setting up this storyline of you guys can be the next Offit for the youth. And to watch what Troy Williams is going to try and do with the receivers he has to sort of be able to picture themselves in that offense all together, all at the same time is pretty exciting. Particular note, I think, is Drew Jackson, who's one of the, depending on which service you ask, one of the four stars who's available. And he should be committing pretty soon, sometime this month. And the feeling is that he's a pretty heavy Utah lead. And that would be a big time get for the youths. I'd like to see them focus on running backs. I've been rewatching a lot of games, and I just don't think that there's a great running back on this roster right now. So I want to see them try and pull somebody in who's a real elite talent. But this week is a banner week for wide receivers and a quarterback. If you wanted to feel the best possible 7-on-7 team, this would be pretty close to it. That's all just going to be on the sideline.
Okay. I choose to disagree on the running back statement.
That's fair.
Devontae Henry Cole is going to be something. Honestly, I think he will challenge Moss, and Moss will get better because those two are—they're going to be fighting for carries.
In the first couple of drives against Arizona, I was like, "There's the Moss that we need to see." The guy who hits the hall, gets down the field, but he had that fumble on the end. I think it was the third drive, and really reverted to the timid player that we've been seeing, That's not getting it done for the youths, and for whatever reason, Devontae Henry Cole's not been able to find his way on the field as often as we'd like.
I'll say this. The timidness reminds me of early last year Joe Williams. I don't know if people recall this. Maybe he needs to retire. Maybe he should have retired over through the bye week.
One can
and then come back. But, Joe Williams was really, really timid this last season and then somehow found his way. But all right, so let's get to the Stanford game. Let's talk about the main thing you've got to talk about when you talk about Stanford and that everyone else has been talking about. But
there's nothing else to talk about. We have to talk about it is
Bryce Love.
He's amazing. He is superhuman. I am used to people saying, hey, they've got a really good running back, and I go look up the stats, and he's, 6.5 yards per carry, and he's got 11 yards per carry against crappy Team A, but he's mortal against good Team B, and he's got 5 or 6 yards per carry on 30 carries, and punched in a couple of short touchdowns or something. But Bryce Love is a monster. He's over 1,000 yards despite only having 5 games. No team has held him to less than 183 yards, something like that. He's been over 12 yards per carry 3 times. He's never been below 8.77, about 9 yards per carry. He's explosive, 27% of his runs are more than 10 yards. For comparison, Joe Williams last season, 17% were over 10 yards. So he is 10% more explosive than Joe Williams. And that, I mean, that's out of control. Joe Williams is a fourth round NFL draft pick, and what did he run, a 4.3, 40? I mean, it is not hyperbole. Bryce Love is the real deal. Fair to say, best player in the country, definitely the best player in the Pac-12. He's mind-blowing, and the youth, even with as good a front seven as they have, you don't stop him, you just contain him.
Yeah, can I get some rankings here? Rushing yards, number one in the Pac-12 and the NCAA. Rushing yards per game, number one in the Pac-12 and the NCAA. All-purpose yards per game, number one in the Pac-12, third in the NCAA. Rushing yards per carry, 11.1 yards per carry, number one in the Pac-12 and the NCAA. I don't even know, but that is ridiculous. And here's, I mean, it's kind of the crazy thing. It's like, as Coach Whittingham kind of says, is like, we kind of fit their mold of football, right? They're going to play some power run, handing the ball to Bryce Love as many times as they can. And our defense, number one rushing defense in the Pac-12, number 10 in the country, allowing 87 yards per game, is going to face their number, number 11 rushing offense total. This is including other people besides Bryce Love. They're number 11 in the country, producing 273 yards per game. I mean, the slugfest 101 is what's going to happen when Stanford offense goes on the floor against the Utah defense front.
It's that true strength against strength. And if you're a fan of trench play, you really want to see defensive tackles and offensive linemen duke it out, and can the linebacker make the stop and fill the gaps and stuff. And if that's what you love, which is my favorite thing about football, it is just everything you can hope for, except Marquise Blair couldn't keep his darn head up, and he is out for the first half. And there's a lot of good gap fillers on Utah's defense. Obviously, Kofiku Luafatasanga is really good. Chase Hansen is incredible at it. But Marquise Blair can deliver a hit to a player like Bryce Love in the gap, and it really stinks that he is not in there in the first half to kind of take some of the wind out of his sails and say, you know, look, we are going to be here all night, and I am going to keep hitting you this hard, because I've never seen a guy Marquise Blair's size, not that he's little, but he's not, you know, defensive end, who hits the way that he does. He's savage.
Look, the fact is, it is called a sucker punch in late rounds. Look, Bryce Love is going to come out after the half, feeling all refreshed after taking a bunch of hits, because it's not like Marquise Blair being there, it's not going to be there. And then Marquise Blair is going to say, I'm back, buddy. It's almost like, I'm thinking Independence Day, the old guy is flying up into the saucer, and he yells, I'm back. Marquise Blair, here's your line. You just hit him. Don't get targeting. Hit him and tell him that. And let's see what happens later on production. But either way, I mean, I'm sorry. I've heard everyone talking about Bryce Love. We've now hit the obligatory, we've talked about Bryce Love.
We can move on.
Let's talk about other aspects of the game, because there is another big aspect. It's called Utah has an offense and Stanford has a defense. So let's talk about these two real quick. So what do you think about the Stanford defense?
I don't think they're that good.
Okay.
I think that they have. You want me to elaborate?
Yeah, maybe a little elaboration. I got some numbers for you, Mr. Statistician Joseph.
I watched the ASU game and I watched the USC game, and they're well coached. It's a David Shaw team. They're a good team, but they have not replaced the talent that they lost last year with similar talent. And we keep expecting them to, because they always have in the past. I just don't think it's happened this year. I also don't think, as I mentioned earlier, that Utah's got the running backs that they need to kind of be at that next level for the entirety of the game. And so I think it's a fairly even matchup because of that absence of a running threat without Tyler Huntley, without more than we've gotten from Moss or DHC. I think they're going to be able to double-team Carrington the way they're going to need to, and they're going to be able to run nickel packages or otherwise flex to allow them to cover Nakua and Singleton. So I don't think that Utah really has an advantage there, but I think that you're going to find over the course of the season that Stanford's not as good as they have been, and Utah is going to be able to do enough to be competitive in the game. It's not that Stanford defense that can hold the team, a decent offensive team like Utah, to set under 10 points the way that they used to be able to do.
So let's start with, so rushing defense, they're allowing almost 200 yards a game. Passing defense, they're allowing pretty much 250 yards, right? Scoring defense, they're allowing 25 points a game. The Utes are averaging 35 right now. Guess what? The Utes offense is going to be able to score all this defense. The defense is good. I mean, they're
ranking 106 in yards per play allowed. That's the basic stat. And you have to ask who they played. But if you ask who they played, well, sure they played USC. Sure they played San Diego State. They played Rice.
Wasn't San Diego State and wasn't that torrential rainfall?
I don't remember the weather.
I can't remember, but let's throw out, that's a 17, they allowed 17 points. Even if you just take, I'm sorry. Maybe I'm wrong. Very little respect.
No, I think the numbers back up what I'm seeing when I watch the games, and that's that they're just not great.
But here's the thing about this. Their defense, we both agree, isn't good. And the offense should score. This is the biggest thing for me, to this game. My problem with all of the offensive coordinators up until this point, from Norm Chow on, but between our yearly offensive coordinator change, which is a yearly thing. We finally have a coach who's a quarterback's coach, who's supposed to have an offense that's good for quarterbacks to make reads. And this offense hasn't put enough points. So, how good is Troy Taylor as an offensive coordinator? We're going to see, I'm assuming Huntley's not playing, we're going to see it in 2 weeks, how much of a game plan he was able to cater to Troy Williams, because Troy Williams, in that lethargic offense we saw when he came on the field last week, we could prove all that wrong. The lethargic offense we saw with A-Rod calling the plays last year with Troy Williams at the quarterback spot, we could throw all of that out. Here's Troy Taylor's point where he can prove he can tailor this offense to know better who's back there taking the snaps and have an offense that's scoring. That is the main thing I want to watch this week.
It's fair to say, well, who have they played? Who have they played? Finally, we're playing somebody, and we're going to find out so much about if Troy Taylor is really a Power 5 caliber offensive coordinator, because he's got a chance to make adjustments to new personnel, make adjustments to a defense that has weaknesses but also has talent. So he's going to have to game plan for Stanford, and he's got time to do it, and it's been late enough in the season that David Shaw's got some tape, and he knows what sort of the basic framework of the Taylor offense is, and it's adjustment time. And this is where previous offensive coordinators, I would say since Norm Chow is exactly right, Norm Chow did amazing things with what he had. Everybody else hasn't, but that ability to say, you do this, and I do this, and it still works. Or even better to say, this is what you're going to do, so I'm going to change before you do to be what you're going to do next, and sort of be that chess game another step ahead. That's what really sets them apart. Arizona wasn't a good example of that. I mean, you kind of want to give him a pass because he had a specific game plan in place for Tyler Huntley that Troy Williams isn't really equipped to do. But he was 6.26 yards per play before Tyler Huntley went down, and 4.58 afterwards. So almost a 2 yard per play drop in offensive production for the Utes. And that's not going to cut it against Stanford. We need to see that over 6 yards per play to feel good about what the Utes are doing. And I think Troy Williams is a pretty darn good quarterback, and I think that, you can do it. You've got to change what you do. You're doing less accurate throws in space at sort of continuing routes and throwing ahead of guys because Williams can't make the same throws Huntley can there. Obviously a lot less of the read option. But what Troy Williams does better than Tyler Huntley, better than almost anybody, is a bomb. He throws these beautiful deep passes down the sideline, down the middle. And, oh, by the way, Utah picked up a Blitnikoff finalist wide receiver who can outrun everyone. So if he can figure out how to run the ball enough that David Shaw doesn't feel like he can triple-team Darren Carrington, I think there's going to be space downfield to really capitalize on what Troy Williams does best, which is those pretty deep balls. And that's, if it happens, that's the game.
Well, we'll see. I mean, that's the one thing. I mean, honestly, like, let's go to everybody's keys to the game. Battle in the trenches.
Yeah, of course.
Are we going to have a running game?
Harrington.
Blah, blah, blah. But this is our first chance to really see whether Troy Taylor is a legit offensive coordinator or not.
I really like what I've seen just in terms of the scheme, and it's fun to watch, and it's interesting, and it's dynamic, and it's all of these things that it hasn't been in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the same thing as, and
yeah,
we just don't know the answer to that yet.
That's true.
And over the next week, and particularly the next 2 weeks, I think we're going to find out.
Can I just say, though, like, with the rankings that some of these Pac-12 teams, they can hold on to them, and the schedule that Utah has, like, depending on how legit the team this is, like, we got some really big games coming up, and it starts with this one. And it's kind of exciting. Like, our team's in it, and not to take a shot at independence or anything.
It's so
but
easy.
We can lose.
It's like a punching bag. Just tag it there.
The youth could afford to, like, lose a game and still have a shot or something like
lose,
that.
It could lose two.
I mean.
And still win the conference and go to the playoffs.
It is crazy. It is crazy.
Lose to USC, lose to Washington, beat Washington in the conference final, and go to the playoffs.
We'll see.
It's a good schedule.
It is a good schedule to watch, and it's going to be – I'm excited for it.
I'm already pumped because they've already exceeded FBI projected 3.7 wins for the Utes.
That FBI thing.
I'm doing an article. What is wrong with these metrics? Why do they hate Utah? And there's a lot of different possible answers, but it's more than a trend. I mean, it's just the way it is, and I don't understand it perfectly, but it's always funny to look at that FBI and go, I wonder how many games are going to exceed that projection by this year. At least two, because it's always at least two. Kyle Whittingham can coach, and he can find talent, and FBI doesn't see it.
Well, before Joseph and I melt like snowman,
it is
so
hot to you guys.
We're going to close it up, but I do want to remind you,
eyes are sweating.
We got a first world problem. We're trying to get some more listeners, obviously. So those of you that are listening, please go find the podcast on your podcast apps of choice, and especially iTunes, and like us, give us a rating, preferably 4 or 5 stars, if you know what I mean.
Nice.
And if you want it, if there's something you want to hear, if there's something you want us to do better, please, you know, tweet at us, email us, at UTalk on Twitter, UTalk@gmail.com on through Gmail or email, of course. And before I pass out, I'm signing out. Go Utes.
Go Utes.
Thanks for listening to UTalk, brought to you by the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Find us on Twitter @UTalkPodcast or email @UTalk@gmail.com.